joining us here today. And just to give you a little bit of background, I am the product manager for HumanWare for the Classic Reader and Product for the Design for People with Learning Disabilities. So before people ask a question about how is HumanWare connected with dyslexia or education, HumanWare has come up with a product called the Classic Reader. And some of you might have known about this, so I just wanted to invite you for just about 2 minutes. So this is actually a portable digital talking book player, and it's a portable unit that people can take to and from school, and it can have a whole bunch of different file formats. So we're able to play days of material on here, and days of material comes from organizations like Supporting for the Blind and Dyslexic, as well as Bookshare, as well as now there's a new opportunity with Microsoft Word plugins to add completely fully audio and text content to their player. We also can upload MP3 files, WAV files, and any text, rich text files, presentation files, as well as XML. So we also built a study tool for that. And so this is being used around the country, or actually around the world, that are using digital talking book players. So with that, I want to turn the presentation over to Renee, and she's going to give us some background information of who she is, and I'll let you know that this is not a picture of her family, but she will explain a little bit about herself before we go ahead and answer some of the questions that were sent to us, as well as ones we thought you would be interested in. With that, I would like to welcome Renee. She joined us from Texas, and I appreciate her expertise and what she's going to be sharing with us. So expert in the field. This past summer, I was invited to the Yale Center for Dyslexia and Creativity by Dr. Sally and Bennett Sheewood, and I spoke there at their first annual conference and got to meet them personally, and that was an honor. And I do teach at the Educational Enhancement Workshop at SMU during the summer. So I'm back with the teachers who taught me, and they were some of my dearest friends, so I always enjoy that. So if we go to the first question on the PowerPoint, please take notes, and ask me any questions you would like. We have some places where we're going to stop for questions. I will do my best to answer them. Number one was, how is a dyslexic brain different from another brain? As I am an educator, I will do my best to reiterate to you what I've learned from all the researchers in the field and their persistent hard work. There are numerous differences. First of all, the brain is structurally different, therefore it functions differently. Or another way of looking at it is they function differently because they're organized differently. Without bogging everyone down with the medical terminology, I will try the best I can to explain the different sections of the brain and the way I personally understand it. While using microscopes and various neuroimaging tools that the researchers have today, they can see that the dyslexic brain is physically different. You can see the differences now. There are structural differences in the cerebral cortex and the thalamus. And the studies so far show that there are changes or differences in the arrangement of the nerve cells. The measurement of the nerve cells shows smaller cells in the visual and auditory sections, as well as a smaller auditory region. Also, to put it very simply, the dyslexic brain are somewhat more symmetrical than the non-dyslexic. Using their imaging tools, and there are a number of imaging tools nowadays, we now know that the dyslexic brain functions in ways that is consistent with their structural differences. Let me say that again, because in my opinion, and the way I see the statement, the brains are working the way they should. Using the imaging tools, we now know that the dyslexic brain functions in ways that are consistent with their structural differences. There are many dedicated researchers, and they're working daily to help us understand the workings of the dyslexic brain. I do not wish to dismiss any of them or their hard work. It is greatly needed and greatly appreciated. However, there are three that have produced and published findings that are easy for the layman to understand, and they have a positive outlook and understanding of this type of brain. I always turn to their words and gain knowledge and strength from their research and their words of wisdom. I often recommend their articles and their books to my parents to read so that they can educate themselves about their children. Dr. Sally and Bennett Sheewitz, which I mentioned earlier, of Yale University and the Yale Center. You also can go online to the Yale Center for Dyslexia and Creativity. They have wonderful articles there. They also have people who write in about experiences, dyslexic students, and they're positive and uplifting and very helpful. But these two doctors are excellent at what they do. Dr. Sally Sheewitz is a neuroscientist pediatrician, and Dr. Bennett Sheewitz is a neurologist, and they work together. And the name of Dr. Sheewitz's book that I recommend is Overcoming Dyslexia. It has information on the dyslexic brain, and it also shows pictures, actual pictures of the neuroimaging that show the difference in the dyslexic brain and the non-dyslexic brain, as well as testimonies from successful dyslexic
show me, and I take it to the other students who are younger. I also let them mentor. We also have some advocacy, but we teach one another how to advocate for ourselves. And so that in itself to me is a gift, and it may be an acquired gift, but they are very good at what they do, and they are excellent teachers to let us know how it is that we learn. And then once again, like I said earlier, we all are different. That's the way it's supposed to be. It is not that just because they are dyslexic, they are assumed to have a gift in any certain area. However, there does seem to be a greater number of dyslexic people who are gifted or show strength. And some areas that have been noticed because of the vast number of dyslexic people who show strength in these areas, and they would be science. For example, my son, who got his technology, occasionally still spells phonetically. However, he is able to read and understand all the scientific terms, the ones I struggle with. There's no grammar reason to that, but I have noticed that that holds true in many of my students. Another area is art, architecture, engineering. A lot of these students seem to be quite gifted in the area of 3D visualization, and that architecture and engineering, it works quite well for them. Technology, the performing arts, dance, acting, music, writing. Many of our great writers, even today, are dyslexic. A lot have strengths in math computation, and they seem to be very sensitive to others' feelings and emotions, and they can pick up on when something is not exactly right for one of their friends. My son does it to me. I can pull everyone video. And this is an added concept, I guess you could call it, or something that just seems to be quite special about these young students. They are able to pick up on our emotions and our sensitivities when other people are not. One time I was at Children's Medical Center, working with a neuropsychologist there, and actually I wasn't working with her. She was teaching me, and I was privy to one of her. She was working on something where the children who had brain tumors, after their treatment, many times their brain rewired. And her specialty was dyslexia. And she noticed that they began to do things and think much like the dyslexic. And so I was privy to that. But I happened to have, there was a surgeon there. And I asked him how he was able to do that, because I know that the medical school must have been quite difficult. And he told me, I'll never forget it, that surgery really had nothing to do with medicine. And I thought, okay, that's a new one for me. And he said, actually, surgery is nothing but engineering. I'm an engineer. I take things apart and I put them back together. And I thought that was quite interesting. And then I've also found that many times in the educational field, we are so busy addressing weaknesses that we forget to address the strengths. And these strengths are just as important, as they will be the foundation for the individual's success in life. We need to be more conscious of this and be knowledgeable and persistent in using these strengths to guide a young person to their areas of success. We need to enable these children and young adults with success as well as failure that comes in life, so to have a more balanced life, which will hopefully allow for a happy, well-rounded life. We've learned much in life from our failures and success, emotionally, intellectually, and socially. We also build on this, a character, a responsibility, and our self-worth. And I do feel that we need to do a better job at balancing this those who are young, especially those who are too young to know how to balance this without our guidance. And it is a balancing act. The theory I had with my son was education first, play second. However, that's just the way I was raised, and I'm not dyslexic. There were many electives that were offered, and I am an elective in the school that I teach in. And he had to give up his elective for 3 years in a row while he saw the other children going to electives. All my students did. But, you know, I don't feel that it harmed them in any way. Most of their parents, myself included, we had sports that were after school, and our classes given outside of school privately. And a lot of these children were enrolled in music classes, art classes, and so on. But I just felt that if he was not successful in his classroom and could not keep up, it would forever haunt him. And I didn't want that. And I felt that in his electives and arts and music and sports, I knew he was quite good at that, most of my students are, that he could catch up with those quickly because of the talents. And so that's the way I did it. Tried to balance it after school and outside of class. Once he entered the seventh grade, however, and he did go to summer school every summer, and that allowed him, by seventh grade, to not only have one elective, but two, and still have me, because we had gotten some of the major subjects out of the way in the summer. And he was quite pleased with that. He never minded summer school because he never knew the difference. He always went. And once he entered high school was when the summer school ended because he was so far ahead he couldn't go to summer school anymore. And he plays football. He's on the golf team. He's the wide receiver on the football team. He loves both of those sports. He is... my son used to, in third grade, he was placed in the special education classes with a superior IQ. And that's where I think it falls back on the educators, finding a way to educate these students to catch them up because the intelligence is obviously there. And I'm happy to say that he is now, and he has been, we were kicked out of special ed in fifth grade. And I say kicked out lovingly and happily. And he is now in the gifted and talented advanced classes. And he was in eighth grade and continues today in the 10th grade. It's hard to tell. He studies hard and long hours. But he's still very pleased. And I do think that that contributed to his confidence and his self-esteem. Today. So you have to find that balance and you have to make it work for these children. And even though it does take a little more effort and time in school, and they do have to do it on a few things, I think after a while it enables them to level that playing field.
Okay, I'm going to pause you here just for a couple minutes. I want to go back and ask some questions.
Okay.
And see what we can do to address them.
Yep.
This is a different question. It's from Claire. And her question is, are there research-based input recommendations for dyslexic students? And what format should we present new information in? And I want to go back, if we can, Renee, and show everyone the website that you were referring to with the Greater School and the other articles. So I'm going to be pulling out of the PowerPoint and into just, we're going to go onto the web here for just a minute, and so you'll be able to see that location. And so if you are able to make a comment about are there research-based input recommendations for dyslexic students?
Okay, yes, there are. And there are several. Texas happens to be a state and they do some more of their tests. Sometimes they can finish in that amount of time, sometimes it takes another day. But what this does is it allows them to finish a test and go to class and not be doing their test in class and fall on the bother behind what the other students are learning in the regular classroom period. They can take notes. We learn to take notes in a very different way than the other students on our computers. So they're able to take notes and keep up with the information. So in this manner, they're able to use their extended time without falling behind in class. So I hope that the main ones is extended time and recommended for reformatting for tests. And a lot of times, if the spelling is so severe and you have no software to age it back, or they're dyslexic, their handwriting is illegible, you can ask or recommend that the notes for the particular class in that day, the lesson, the concept, be given to the student. You know, the teachers I had at SMU, they walk their talk, and because they did it to me when I was in school. If I couldn't remember something, they told me. And what Jana Jones, my professor, who has won many awards, and I was very privileged to have her, told me that if you want them to know something, give it to them. Give them the knowledge. Don't take up their time having to look it up through all the words in a chapter or, in the back of the book, looking up definitions. She said, give it to them so that they have time to learn the knowledge that you want them to know. And that is exactly what we do here. And it works. And you can also have things read to them orally. That can be a recommendation. Or if they have the software, it can be entered into their computer and the software can read it to them. And we also have, it's very important that they do not handle their spelling. In Texas, at the high school level in English, that there's things we call TEKS, Texas Essential Knowledge Skills, and we can't get around the spelling or essay writing. However, if they've had their technology classes and they are able to use their software in English, which is recommended, then the spelling issue is no longer an issue because they have a word projector and it's right in front of them.
Another question, and I answered this privately. So we asked those teachers to change information. And the other question that was asked is, what format should we present new information in? And I'm going to, there's a lot of different things, but I'm going to make a comment, and I think they made some comments about giving it to them in the way that they need to receive it. But I would also have a conversation with the student and say, what is the best way for you to receive this information as well? And to have a dialogue and have a problem-solving idea to go through. Because they might have never tried having material read to them in the past. And so using services like Bookshare or R&D is a great option for some of these students. And actually, thousands of students are using these resources on a daily basis. I'm going to go to the second question, Renee, so that we can stay on track.
I'd like to just say a few words about that. We do use Bookshare on the Classmate and R&D, and that is a recommendation that we use for many of our students. And my son, I always go back to him because he's on a nightly basis. And we are on a daily schedule, and the classes are an hour and a half. But still, he wasn't able to keep up. And so that's when he had to turn to listening. He does need the words. He tells me he needs to see the words at the same time. So if we have it on Bookshare, and that's usually the outside reading, and it's English classes and other classes, the words are there. And if it's RFBNA, then he uses his textbook to follow along. But he said it was very important, and this is the way he put it, it was very important that he had a picture of the words in front of him while he was listening. And so what I looked, and his grades did drop at first, and then they slowly began to go back up. And what I realized at this time was the listening is an auditory skill that to listen to comprehend as if you were reading. Is an acquired skill, and for most of us, and so he had to acquire that skill. And so what I've started doing, usually by eighth grade, my eighth graders can coast through just fine without me, but I have started keeping them, and what we do is we listen to all the textbooks and outside readings in the lab with me as a guide. We do take notes at the same time, and maybe sometime we can have a webinar, and I'll show you all how to do that, because it's very different. But I now understand that I have to have these eighth grade students' auditory skills much more fine-tuned before they hit high school, so that they're ready to go with the listening skills.
So, great. Thanks, Renee. I've got another question here from Mary. And her question is, my student is dyslexic, but is a strong auditory listener. We've been in touch base on this. His IEP lists auditory books and other technology. His teacher seems to think that this is only for home use and resists having his Victor Reader in the classroom. How can I convince his teacher to let him use it?
To use his Victor Reader?
Yep.
To use the auditory books in the classroom? I don't know why they're objecting. All of our students, if it's on, you know, their IEP or 504, to use auditory. You know, there's so many different ways to do that. You've got the class page, you've got your computer, you've got the iPhone, if they have an iPhone, you can read your books on that. And we just use headsets. And so the teacher says to turn to a certain page, place or her thought. She'd say, where am I? And it was one of my students who'd take notes well on their computer that would tell her exactly verbatim what she had said. And so she depends on these students now. But she does everything on a Twilio. She even reads the test out loud. And this is a classroom, it's just a regular classroom with all the students in it, with IEPs, five reporters, the English married student. And all of her test scores went up, and she had 100% on her tax test. So if you, and many times, I do use psychology, and I do use children to use it during self-advocacy when they're older. I started many years ago going to the teacher, and I say psychology, but I really truly believed it because our teachers are really excellent. I'm very fortunate. But, I would tell them if anything at all, if anyone at all can teach the student this information or the subject, it's you. And I need your help in helping me find a way to get this knowledge to this child. And usually when I put the responsibility of it on the teacher in that manner, I always have cooperation. So I don't know how, but those are experiences I have had. So hopefully you can take from some of those and try some of those things.
Perfect. Thanks, Renee. I'm going to ask you at the bottom of your computer, Renee, pop up and go to webinar presentation, and you're going to see a question that is presented for you in a successful event as well for those people that need that accessibility. So there's a question from Lorenz, and I'm going to try the last part. And we're going to address this question really quickly if we can, because we've only really gone through our first question so far. It's at 6:15 already. So the question is, I'm going to read it out loud. What are your views on remediation, strategy training for dyslexics late in life? Example, people who have coasted along without realizing they were dyslexic and are only properly assessed later in life due to difficulties at work.
I have an adult class. And what I do is I start at the very beginning. And that was what I was taught. That's what I was taught. And SMU do always start at the beginning. And because you have to have a foundation, you have to have something to fall back on that is correct. And so I always start with what we call your Texas Dyslexia Therapy, which is a different way to teach reading and spelling, and they are able to catch on because of maturity very quickly, so it goes fast. And then simultaneously, I put them on the computer with software, they start learning how to manipulate the software to address almost every issue that they have. And then those that are having difficulty at work, we talk about what the difficulties are and strategies to address those. But my answer to the question is, start with dyslexia therapy at the very basics and work your way up. And
One of the things I was going to say, Renee, is both looking at remediation and technology together. And so you're looking at the remediation as well as the technology, and they will accelerate a little bit faster. Am I putting words in your mouth there?
Yes, that's exactly correct.
So you're saying that it will help them if they use the technology on top of it. So
yes, it will. And like I said, hopefully in the future we can have a webinar. Brendan, Diggy, and I were very aware of how I teach and what I teach and what I use. And maybe we can show you all these things that are so beneficial and helpful.
So we now want to discuss how does technology best work for people who have dyslexia?
It goes back to the very beginning. They're just so quick to learn. Even the adults who didn't actually grow up in this technology stage, with, I teach does you, and then what the software and knowing when to use what and how to use it, that pretty much takes care of the issues addressed with dyslexia, the spelling, the written expression disorder, the short-term memory, and the pulling of words when needed. Really and truly, I have found that with the technology, the students are able to produce the knowledge that they have and want to say at a much faster rate. And I don't know if it's because my son told me the screen becomes a picture and then aids his memory. And even just for example, last night, he times everything because he said the muscle motion in his fingers, we learn to spell from that. We can't tell you how to spell it verbally, but we can type it just like Michelle's my age years ago before there were cell phones. We'd have to type in a number into the telephone if we couldn't remember it. Well, it's the same on the computer. The fingers learn where to go to spell a word. And he said also when he looks at something on the screen, it's a picture, and he can see it later. He can pull it up and look at it. And, you know, I never was real sure about this picture business, but that's what I get often from my students. And so he says it aids his memory. And last night when I was helping him, he had to memorize rote memory, which we all know is difficult for us, formulas for his pre-AP algebra 2 class. You know, he called me in to drill him on it, and I did. And he would close his eyes, and the comment that I noticed he made was, just a minute, I have to get a picture of it. What he had done was typed it into his computer, and he was able to pull up in his mind, I'm gathering this from what he said, a picture. And he could read it off verbatim and then tell me what it was. So I think perhaps between the software addressing the pulling of words on command and the spelling and everything else that it does, it also provides us with a stimulus that they're able to keep up with in a way that their brain obviously must process, and able to give us that information that they have difficulty telling us. To me, that is how it best works for people who are dyslexic, and it cuts way back on that extended time because we're able to process so much faster when it's through the computer. And then I teach something that's called double screen, and you're able to have the information that you need up on the screen at the same time that you're writing your essay or whatever it is you're doing. And so it actually becomes your memory, and you're able to see both at the same time. So that's a tremendous thing. So I hope that answers this somehow.
I wanted to, there is a comment here by Virginia, and I've actually used this particular method as well, or looked at it in the past. So she refers to the Linda Moog Bell Visualization and Verbalization Therapy that explains the picture phenomenon you were referring to with your son. So,
it's a great... That's an excellent program as well. I do know about that. I do have some students who have been through that, and it's very successful. I have some who have done that and therapy. And, the different ways of teaching reading, too. And I highly recommend all of them. I think they work. And I think, we have to address the individual, each individual.
I want to go through the rest of some of the PowerPoint parts at the very end, and then I'm going to come back to Darlene's question and answer that particular comment. But I wanted to share because I don't want to hold everyone up for the presentation. Because I know you sometimes have a timeline, and obviously we need to have another session on this because there's so much to discuss and to share, and so many questions that are very valid and need to be addressed. So I'm going to actually get through all of our questions that we had. And I wanted to let you know about future presentations that we are going to be offering. And this is new for us, so please bear with us as we go through, and sorry you couldn't see the PowerPoint to begin with, but we are going to be doing a presentation on Wilshire on their international services. Down in the States, actually, they have a lot of services that people in Canada and where I'm from do not have access to. We're going to talk about how we can have access to this and accessible content, and what does that mean. And then we're going to be looking, and there's stuff for Canada on access. And then we have a Bookshare International presentation. So I noticed someone had joined us from Singapore tonight, and we really have people join us from all over the world, which is great. Another presentation that we're going to have is a parenting presentation, and we're going to be talking about the grieving process and resources that you need to know about, and I think that this one is very interesting as well, and we talked today in the presentation a lot of information about how to work with the school system and how do you encourage those accommodations and sometimes how to be a mother bear gently. And I grew up with a mother bear that really helped me to get the services that I needed. And so she's actually going to be sharing information, and she's become an advocate in many other people's lives. And so they're going to be going through a presentation for you on that. We're going to also be looking at secondary, again, with Dr. Nina Giselli, and she's going to be talking about some of the laws and how to access and make sure we're maximizing the services of post-secondary. And then we're going to have another presentation with post-secondary with Bookshare. What is an educational therapist? So Allison Seidel is going to be presenting on what is that and what kind of services can educational therapists provide for people. And then we're also going to be doing some Classmate Reader 101 on where do you find content and how do you transfer that information. I wanted to let you know that we also have past presentations available. And then we're going to come back to this other question. And here is information regarding Renee. So please, if you have any questions, send questions to Renee at Renee K@table1.net. And that's her home address, so she's not going to be able to answer during the day. And if you have any questions for myself, then please send them to Brenda.McBride@humanware.com. And that's just some ways to get a hold of us. And also, I wanted to let you know that we have now come up with a new package, actually, as of today. So if you want some information on it, we have information and research on the impacts of digital talking book players. And so here's some great information, and we actually have a loaner program for the Classmate Reader. So if you are wanting to implement something in your school system, then we do loaners that people can try them out with their students. And that's really what Renee has done with her students, as well as other people around the United States. So, and I also wanted to let you know that we have tutorial information. So I wanted to cover that before people start signing off. And I'm going to come back to these questions as long as people are willing to hang around. If they're going to go back and answer as much as we can tonight, is that okay, Renee?
Yeah, that's fine.
So I'm going to pull up the questions from Darlene. And the question is, I think, and she was speaking about the accommodations in the school system, and the question is, I think that the last question speaks to how to convince professionals that learning that LD or disability down, as well as technologies just coming into your software program. So I'm going to pass that comment over to Renee, and I think we might call it a night after this so that we only have that hour and see if there's any other questions.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and let our people who are on know that I am hearing impaired, terribly hearing impaired, and I know that's quite strange. People are often surprised that someone who can't hear teaches reading. So I want to go over this question that was lengthy to make sure I heard it all correctly. She's wondering if the students are given these accommodations, how do they cope in the real world outside where accommodations are not addressed? Is that correct?
Yes. So the argument is that in the real world, they won't be able to use the accommodations that we give our people.
Okay, thank you. Actually, in the real world, you do use accommodations. You can have accommodations on your, as long as you have a history and you know how to present a letter and petition for accommodations on your ACT and SAT into college. You can have those accommodations on that test. You can also have your accommodations in college. You can also have a grad school, law school, med school. And mostly the accommodations come down as you grow to technology. And what many researchers have found, myself included, now although I'm a teacher, I'm not labeled a researcher, is that once a young person finds their career of choice and they are able to, at that time, focus all their studies, time and effort on that particular subject, they become mini specialists. They are so accustomed to using the language and using the knowledge that they acquire, just like the doctors and the MDs, the dentists, the architects, the engineers, that, you know, are also quite famous, just like some of our presidents, that the accommodations do become less and less. And if they have the double deficit, what I have found is those that are hyper, have the hyperactivity involved. First of all, as a dyslexic person, you learn at a very early age how to think, quote, unquote, outside of the box. In other words, they have to come up with a way to produce what we are asking for from them as educators, a way to do that with some value for them into a manner which they can present to us. And so that takes very much out-of-the-box thinking. So by the time they're at adulthood, they're very good at that. Then they have the hyperactivity to go along with it. Once you get to a level college studies, nothing can be submitted in writing. You have to type it. Everything is emailed. It is all technology, I know, because I have a daughter in a fourth year of college. And so the technology goes hand-in-hand with the education. And by this time, they have used their accommodations enough to know exactly how and when to use them. And so what happens is they become very specialist in what they do. And really toward the end, all they need is their computers. And I had to go to the doctor today myself for a checkup. And, you know, he pulled up my file on his computer. He made all of his notes on his computer. As I talked, he, you know, was typing on the computer. And unfortunately, he saw all the tests that I was supposed to have at this age, chose not to go to, and now required me to. But many of the doctors here in town are dyslexic. And they will tell you how they had to take fewer classes, and it took them longer. However, they are some of the best doctors that you could ever hope for, because when you go to them with a situation that is quite unusual, they're so accustomed to thinking outside of the box and looking elsewhere that they make outstanding physicians
tonight, which has been wonderful to see. I'm learning how to use it. One of the other questions that I would like to actually end on is, how do you use tools to support foreign languages?
We don't like languages. Regardless of what your own language is, it is very difficult. There's several ways around this. You can get software that has a translator in it and learn auditorily. A lot of my students do that. I will tell you personally what I did. It may work for you, it may not. My son wanted desperately to learn how to speak Spanish because we do live in Texas and we have Hispanics here. But it was just very difficult. It was actually a nightmare. He did get an A, but we did a minimum of 3 hours a night on top of everything else just for that foreign language. And so the second year of his foreign language, you have to learn to, and I hate to use this word in a negative way, and actually for us it's very positive, but you have to learn how to manipulate the educational system. And I have found that if you go to summer school, at least here in Texas, you would have to check where you live, how it works. But, and you take a class such as this, a foreign language, the credit for your GPA and your graduation, depending on the diploma you're going for, the credit transfers above grade. And it is all done on a computer. Do it at your own pace. And so what I recommend my students to do is take their foreign language in the summer. It's shorter. They go at their own pace. They get more one-on-one help. And then I introduce them to whatever software I need to so that they can listen and learn. And many times if the instructor is notified the student is dyslexic, at least what I am, they're very understanding, very helpful. And then also, there are some universities that don't require a dyslexic student to have a foreign language. SMU is one of those. And I may be speaking out of term here, but I don't think Yale does either. But many times if you look, the university will not require, they require that you replace it with something else, like a foreign culture, to learn about the culture or something to around this area. And then also, and like, again, you would have to check with your state. I know that once you graduate high school here in Texas, you can ask for an exemption during university years on foreign language because of your disability. So I do know that foreign language is a sore spot for these students, understandably so. But you just have to look for your best option because it is required or something equivalent to it. And also, many times, you might want to check sign language is accepted as a foreign language. And so they can do sign language, which is a picture in their mind, and they do quite well in that. And I even have a dyslexic student who is majoring in deaf ed and learning sign language because it was a sign language she took instead of, or in place of, what we would consider a foreign language. So there are options out there. It just depends on where your locale is, where you live, and what they are willing to do. Like I said, some places will completely exempt you from it.
I did not intend to take foreign language. I had a hard enough time learning English, but I didn't need to add that other complication in my life. So I now work for a company where we have a lot of people that speak different languages, and I actually use Rosetta Stone, and it provides that material in 5 different ways, and so I think it's a great option to look at that. And it's neat to be able for myself to finally learn some words and have it stick in my brain and not to just go in one ear and out the other. And so that's another option for some foreign languages. And sometimes libraries actually will have that particular software that you can go down and use. And people are using that actually for students with learning disabilities because you have to articulate correctly to continue on to the next level. And yes. So that's an option.
Yeah, we use that in the school district that I'm in, and we also use other software. And there is a site you can go to and purchase and download called Babylon. My son did use that in addition to the other, and it will translate any language into any other language. And so it was helpful too. So you can, surf the internet on multiple sites that Rosetta Stone, Babylon, it's within the software that I use. There's a translator, but it only does 4 hours. And but there is help out there. How helpful if you're in an actual course, foreign language course? I don't know. It's just difficult for us. And that's why my best option where I live, and it did take some research and time, but was to find that if you take it in summer school, you get the credit, and if you did not do well, but you passed, then that's okay. It's not going to go against your GPA. You receive the credit for that grade.
Is that website called Babelfish?
No, it's actually called Babylon.
Okay.
And I don't know, if we have another webinar, I'll make sure to have all of the sites that my students use and the software that they used to present at the webinar so that students can use them and teachers can use them to find what would work best for each individual person.
Thanks so much, Renee. At this point, I think I really appreciate your expertise. I have people falling off the presentation. I know that we've gone over substantially compared to our allotted time. But I want to thank Renee for her expertise and her insight and, her heart in looking after and taking care of students with learning disabilities and allowing them to achieve their ultimate best. And through technology, I know that her students are excelling in ways that they would not have been able to in the past. And so there's continuing questions to come in, and I will ask for another time in which we can continue this conversation. I see that there's lots of questions, and we didn't even get through our PowerPoint. So I appreciate everyone for their conversation with this, and we hope to see you here again in the future. And please send your comments and questions to us, and we would love to hear them. So thanks for joining us. We're going to call it a night, and thanks for all of your questions again. Renee, do you have any closing comments?
No, just feel free to email me. I'll do the best I can to get back to you. I do receive 2 to 3 pages of emails a day, and on my personal site, which I cannot access at work, I try to answer as many as possible in the evening and help my high school student at the same time who wants to be a doctor. So you can imagine what the schedule's like. But I